So now you know that I'm a doctor since 2 days, and I must I must say that I'm a little researcher, and I'm very impressed to be here, and I want to thank the organizers, the Casa de Velázquez, ISM, and NICIS, if that's the way you pronounce it. And I want to thank Michiel Lisenberg for disclosing our disagreement, which is, well, you'll see, rather rhetoric. So I'm a Middle Eastern medievalist studying Kurdish history through Arabic and Persian historiography. The task that I have undertaken since a bit more than 12 years in this field, following the path of infamous predecessors like Vladimir Minovsky, is to understand the production of a Kurdish ethnic difference during the pre-modern era. What are the factors that gathered and distinguished a certain amount of people according to this belonging? The papers and the conferences that I usually give revolve around the questions of the political construction of a Kurdish territory, the aspects of a Kurdish-Turkish competition within the armies of the Egyptian and Syrian Sultanate between the 12th and the 14th centuries, or the coincidence of the Kurdish case with the Khaldunian paradigm, well studied by Professor Martinez Gro, so I pronounce it now the Spanish way. These presentations that I give always end up with a round of questions from the audience, and amongst these questions, at least one of these of the attendants never failed to ask, "And what is it to say about the Kurdish language?" I usually answer referring to what I consider scattered and vague indications of a Kurdish linguistic distinction mentioned in Arabic historiography, but I never come up with a single and precise demonstration, as I consider this question to be rather marginal in taking into account my main focus, which is why the Kurds are Kurds. Now that I'm forced to embrace this issue, I will be delighted to explore the relationship between language and Kurdishness through, well, supposedly it was almost 1,000 years of Kurdish history, starting with the first encounters of the Kurds with the Caliphate and ending with modern-day Kurdish nationalism. So I must confess that this presentation was very ambitious, and I think I will elaborate more on the medieval questions. And but you'll see that I guess that since Professor Lisenberg explores the question of vernacularization in the Muslim world, I will not elaborate much on the modern period. But you see that I will show that I definitely don't agree with him, but I rather take another path about vernacularization and standardization. And I'm more into a long durée and but less depth approach than what he did. So medieval Arabic and Persian sources state that the main Kurdish groups lived anywhere between the Fars region in the east and Syrian Jezire in the west, and from Georgia in the north to Khuzestan in the south. These same sources also noted that the Kurds inhabited a multitude of environments, from warm steppe-like deserts to high snow-capped mountains. However, after an overall survey of the sources between the 8th to the 14th century, the image that emerges is that of an agro-pastoral population essentially residing in mountainous zones. Indeed, pre-Mamluk sources, and even Mamluk sources, used a number of designations to describe the tribal lands of the Kurds, including Biled el-Akrad, Zozan el-Akrad, Jibel el-Akrad, etc. And compared to the nomadic Turkic populations, it seems that the zone of Kurdish tribal movement was relatively restricted. They occupied an intermediary position, living in the territories between the Arabian deserts and the Iranian and Anatolian plateaus. It is quite impossible to know why the populations living in these regions have come to be categorized as Kurdish. I mean, like, what is the first moment of this gathering. However, a thorough examination of the texts allows us to grasp some aspects of the economy of this categorization. First, we have been able to divide the medieval period into two specific phases regarding the use of the Kurdish category. The first, from the 8th to the 11th century, which links this category systematically to the categories Arab, Arab, and Ajam, and where the Arab supposed origin of the Kurds is often recalled. The second phase, from the 11th to the 15th century, where there is a diversification of the statement of difference. And the study of this second phase is crucial to define the set of contexts of meaning and records to which this category belonged. The models presented assemble and modulate and never are organized around the center. To understand this issue fully, it is necessary to regard the reflection of Catherine Kiminal on categories of foreignness, and I quote her, the categorization of people and of their relationships involves an underlying construction of context of meaning. Categorization does not just mean the arrangement of objects in predeterminated classes. It also implies selecting a principle of classification that contributes to define the situation. Regarding the case of Kurds in the Middle Ages, at least five models may be proposed. These models are registers, which shall include the word Kurd, namely, so five registers, one and two, which are the registers of Ajamness and Arabness, which are linked and contradictory. The third register, which is the Khaldunian register of putting the Kurds and defining the Kurds according to sedentarity and Bedouinness, within this dichotomy where the Kurds are situated. The fourth is the geoethnic register of peoples attached to a specific territory. The fifth is the, which is like self-explanatory, the register of an ethnological sense of community and the relationship with the Turks. Basically, it's about the fifth is about how Kurds define themselves subjectively, and like we have some informations on that in the text. So to sum up these proposals, let's provide you with a set of simplified assertions assumed to define the Kurds during the Middle Ages. So first, and referring to the first register, Kurds are a type of Arab. I'm going very fast because it doesn't work like that. It's like it's more. So Kurds are a type of Arab would or might imply that that this this way of categorizing is really putting the Kurds in the box of Arab, which is not it's not working like that. It works more like a, it's metaphorical, like so to speak. It's an analogy that is efficient. I won't elaborate because we have to speak about languages. The second is the Kurds are a type of Ajam, okay, but it goes along with it. Kurds are a type of Bedouin, or Kurds live in their own territory. Okay, the fifth is Kurds are Kurds because they compete with the Turks to increase their power and get access to resources. Very simple. I will not elaborate on these models, and we can discuss them later. However, let us keep in mind that none of them rely on the specific criterion of Kurdish language to define the Kurds. The assertion the Kurds are Kurds because they speak Kurdish is rather absurd during the Middle Ages, which does not mean that it is not an underlying factor of differentiation. The fact of the matter is that although language is not central in categorization, it is always around and implicit. It's not at the core, but it's always somewhere. It is, for instance, certainly at stake in considering the registers of Ajamness and Arabness. However, it is the Arabic language and not the Kurdish language that is at the center of the process of categorization in this case, and most likely because it is the language of the empire, the language of the caliphate. So let's jump to the very subject of this presentation and the relationship between Kurds and their language. The first indication of a Kurdish language spoken by the Kurds can be found in El Mas'udi's encyclopedia called Muruj al-Dahab. El Mas'udi indicates that while the Kurds were Arab, they had forgotten their language. They have been isolated in Faradu, that's the word he uses, a long time, and have joined the mountains and valleys for reasons which led them to do it. They have intermingled with those who were there, the Arajin, so we can translate that by non-Arab or Iranians, and Furs, which we can translate with Persian, among the communities living in towns and settlements. Therefore, they lost their language, lisanahum, their language, and now he uses another word. He uses the word lugha, became ajamiya, non-Arab or Iranian. Each variety of Kurds has its own Kurdish dialect. Dialect is might be the word used is لغة. لكل نوع من الأكراد لهم لغة بالكردية. For Al-Mas'udi, the fact that the language of the Kurds is Ajamiya is of secondary significance. He does not describe the kind of languages the Kurds speak and their variety. What is important is whether they are Arabs and not, and quite clearly, Al-Mas'udi concurs that they are Arab. Yet the Ajami element is present and sets the Kurds apart, or explains a difference that should not provoke a differentiation. So there's a difference. We explain that for conjunctural reasons, and then we gather. Once again, the language is not the central criterion. It is only determined by the importance of the belonging to Arabness, that is to say, the integration of the Kurds to the core of the Arabo-Islamic Empire. The elements Arab and Ajam are modulated in the words of Arab authors to construct and reconstruct the category Kurd. The element Arab is the one binding element, while the Ajam element is the one differentiating. The category Kurd is thus at the crossroad of these two groups, groups, and not a subset or an amalgamation of them. To understand the difference between the two periods I presented above, like in between a period that refers to Arabness and Ajamness, and another period that is after, actually, let's say, after the collapse or the decline of the caliphate, we can make this comparison in between the description of the concept of Kurds supplied by Al-Mas'udi, so during the 10th century, and the one offered by Al-Maqrizi in the 15th century, more than four centuries later. We will not hear the inversion of the respective importance of the elements of differentiation, Ajam and Arab. As we have already seen, Al-Mas'udi reports that Kurds are Arab who exchange their language for a Ajamiya language. The author quotes other stories about the origin of the Kurds, that they are children of the concubines of Solomon and demon Jasad, for example, those children were driven, supposedly driven to the mountains and valleys, etc. However, he indicates that the prevailing opinion, al-ashhar, and the most accurate, al-asah theory, is the one that presents them as the descendants of Rabia ibn Nizar, an Arab Bedouin tribe. In the 15th century, al-Maqrizi, who is totally inspired by Al-Mas'udi, relates exactly the same legends about the origin of the Kurds, so the children of the demon Jasad, etc. But he never, and he refuses the idea that the Kurds might have descended from Rabi'a ibn Nizar. He further indicates that the fuqaha who wished, I quote him, we wished to ingratiate the Ayyubids when they came to power in Egypt, had claimed that the Kurds were descendants of the Arab tribes of Bakr or Qusay. But, and I quote him again, but they are in fact a group of Ajam, made up of multiple tribes. Both authors give three criteria of differentiation: the supposed origin, the lifestyle, and the language, which is here present in the back. However, the two elements, Ajam and Arab, reverse from one author to the other. For El-Masudi, assuming that the most accurate theory of the origin of the Kurds is their Bedouin ancestry, while for El-Makrizi, writing in the 15th century, the connection between Kurds and Arab is regarded as artificial, as it was an ideological tool with which to strengthen the prestige of the Ayyubids. And I will now talk about the Ayyubids, so coming back a little earlier than the El-Makrizi's period. And while talking about the Kurdish ethnicity during the Middle Ages, it is always worth mentioning the Ayyubids, this dynasty of Kurdish origin that has taken power in Egypt and Syria at the end of the 12th century, has somehow favored the insertion of many Kurds within the military and civil elite of these countries during all the 13th century. It was backed up by what Ibn Khaldun and Gabriel Martinez Gros calls a asabiya, a hidden solidarity, strengthening its basis of power by the very idea, sometimes elusive, that being a Kurd would ensure a better access to the resources. The question always asked when it comes to the Ayyubids is, were they and their Kurds, that is to say the Kurdish tribes that have followed them from Upper Mesopotamia, were they speaking Kurdish? Well, from what historians might know, there is not any occurrence of a Kurdish language being spoken within the Kurdish military or civil elite during that period. Although agreements and alliances between Kurds, conspiracies of the Kurds against the Turks, etc., are very well documented. That is to say, Kurds during the Ayyubid period spoke the same language, stitch marks, but it was not necessarily a Kurdish language. That observation of the absence of a Kurdish language can also be explained by the will, already stated by El-Makrizi, to maintain a certain ambiguity regarding the belonging of the Kurds to the Arab group. To emphasize on this aspect, it is noteworthy that many Kurdish intellectuals of the periods, as well as many soldiers, were also talented and renowned poets in Arabic, not to mention the fact that Saladin was said by his panegyrists to be learned in genealogies and exploits of the Arabs. So you can read Bahad-Din Ibn Shaddad on this story. What surfaces at of the usage of by the Kurds of languages during the Ayyubid or Mamluk period is that they might surprisingly speak good Arabic, as poets already mentioned, but most of the time Arabic authors mocked the Kurds for not speaking well. That was the case of Jamal ed-Din Khosterin, Abu Tayyib el-Kurdi, who was dead in 1222, a Kurdish soldier of the Syrian army. He had a strong accent and a pronunciation defect, although he could compose wonderful poetic verses in Arabic. So if there is one thing that offends the educated urbanite Arab elite, it is the lack of refinement of the Kurds, which above all requires a mastery of Arabic. Two factors underscore the importance of this concept by, for example, Yaqut al-Hamawi, the author of a famous geographic encyclopedia in his description of Erbil. Erbil, you know, is a city situated nowadays in Iraqi Kurdistan. First, he indicates that the town inhabitants are Arabized Kurds. Akrad qad ista'rabu. He specifies that if I have 15 minutes, I don't think I will go into details here, but he quotes a very interesting poem referring and mocking the way people in Erbil speaks. And, I can read it. Let him be cursed, my devil. So, what he suggested me when he led me to go to Erbil. I got there an evil day, and I do not doubt that I had arrived in Karbala. I said, he's right, the one that quotes Erbil as an example and says, this is latrines. There is a population in the market that if you see them, you see disastrous people. Every Kurd is a donkey, and all Iraqis have fled the price inflation that goes on there. This distance was annoying and distressed me. You will only hear nonsense from a Kurd. Bubu, Alaku, Khustiri, Khilu, Milu, Musaka, Mankala, Wamamu, Maku, Wamamki. Then they said, Bu Yarki Taji, etc. I won't go on. Apart from the fact that this poem is an excellent illustration of the strong link between the idea of civilization, at least cultural, religious, and social orthodoxy, terrestrial and cosmic order, and representations of the practice of Arabic, the elements presented here look nothing like what we may consider a Kurdish language. The expression Bu Yarki Taji, for example, resembles more Turkish or a mix of Arabic and Turkish, and the enumeration, the funny enumeration in this same poem, that starts with Bubu, is actually a series of Kurdish names, Asma. You can note for instance, the name Khushtiri, which is the name of another of the personality I was talking to. But I think it's an important point, because however. Well, yes, I want to say is that I think Kurdish onomastic is a very strong manifestation of Kurdish linguistic distinction from the 10th until the 14th century. It's the main, actually, manifestation of Kurdish difference. Example among others is the name of Saladin's uncle, Shirku, whose laqab Asad ed-Din directly echoes the connotation of the name Shirku. The element Shir, which means lion, and Asad ed-Din is a good example of how a dissimulated solidarity can arise in the world of language. Well, what I mean here is that there is probably still a lot more to dig in concerning the Kurdish onomastic system of the period, but nothing can be added to the forms of the Kurdish language that the Kurdish language might have taken at this time period. Its grammar, phonology, lexicology might remain forever obscure. Well, to conclude on the medieval period, the Kurdish language, whatever this expression might refer to, was undoubtedly a factor of the constitution of ethnic boundaries at a micro-social level, as well as any other cultural traits that was conceived as proper to the Kurds. Onomastic was one of these traits. We can take, for instance, the story of an Ayyubid Amir, Al-Mashtub, who, after being jailed for several months, finds his son wearing braids in the matter of the Turks. The father upsets, trims the braids, as Al-Isfani relates this episode, saying, "We, the Kurds, don't have these manners with our hair." This is one example of a cultural trait manipulated in order to create a boundary. Language might have worked along these lines during the medieval period. It was an element that was used to distinguish the Kurds from the others, and not an element lying at the core of the Kurdish identity. However, it is impossible to know anything about the uses of Kurdish language since the Arabic and Persian sources since the Arabic and Persian sources were not interested in the micro-social process of the construction of ethnic boundaries, but mainly focused on the macro-social processes which work along micro-political lines. The Kurdish language was not formalized and was not ethnic per se. Ayyubids, Mamluks, and probably Kurds didn't have any interest in restricting the Kurdish category to some firm criteria. Among them, we would find the language, but they decided not to use this tool. Indeed, they did not need to make the Kurdish difference a linguistic difference to make it politically efficient while living in a very multilinguistic world, like in Syria and Egypt. Middle Ages were a historical stage of great ethnic flexibility. I think I'm going to stop here and elaborate more during the question maybe.